This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by a CMIO, a Chief Medical Information Officer, Dr. Patrick Woodard. Dr. Woodard is with the Renown Health System. Renown is one of these systems that's grown over the last decade into being just a terrific system with a great reputation for high quality care in its area of the world, the sort of Reno area of the world. We're going to talk to Dr. Woodard today about the CMIO's role, COVID-19, casinos, and more. Dr. Woodard, can you take a moment and introduce yourself?
Absolutely. And first of all, thank you, Scott, for having me on here. It's an honor to be here, and it's just a great time to be able to talk about the role of the CMIO, especially as COVID has kind of changed the role dramatically in the last several months. My name is Patrick Woodard. I got my start as a CMIO officially as about a year ago. I'm the CMIO at Renown Health. And before that, I was the Associate Chief Medical Officer for IT with the same health system without a CMIO. So very similar role, and very happy to work very closely with my colleagues, both in the clinical side of things and in the IT side of things. One of my great joys is the blending of those two. And it's really just having gotten my start in kind of in residency, starting a startup, moving into this position really made a lot of sense. And it's been really a joy to be able to help take care of patients on a much broader scale than just bedside to bedside.
Dr. Woodard, when I first asked you the role of Chief Medical Information Officer, how do most physicians come into that role? Were they physicians that just loved IT? Were they double majors? How do they end up being in the CMIO role? Is there a typical path, and what is that?
I think the most typical path is that it's a very atypical path, to be completely honest with you. I think it's a little bit different for everyone. I think unlike being a CMIO, where many CMIOs kind of get into the role by accident, becoming a physician is something that requires a lot of intentionality. You don't accidentally go through 7 years of school, so you end up becoming a physician, of course, first, and then typically it's a physician or provider who has an interest in technology that maybe came from their childhood, or they picked it up in high school or college. That certainly was my case. And then it just became an opportunity to say, you know, I am a physician. I want to take good care of patients. I have tools available to me, and I want to be able to make the best use of the tools that I have available to take care of those patients. And many times that's maximizing the use of that technology that's at their fingertips. And I think they kind of accidentally walk themselves into it by inadvertently volunteering themselves for additional work.
And you've enjoyed it a great deal.
Absolutely. I wouldn't ask for a different job.
Were you always somebody that was interested in numbers, data, stats, those kinds of things, or not necessarily, or how did you grow into that interest?
I would say that my interest was actually more in making things better or easier for either myself or my patients. I remember even just back in college, tinkering with websites to make them work a little bit better, and, you know, oftentimes spending more time fixing it than the ultimate fix would save. And I think the idea of being able to make the system better for your colleagues or the patients that you see is the ultimate real goal. And then, of course, knowing, using that data to say these are the areas that need the most improvement really helps support that mission.
I'm going to ask you really three questions. First about Renown Health for a moment, then about COVID-19, then about casinos. First, Renown Health. Renown Health is a sort of a system under Tony Sloanheim and under leadership there that has really grown in stature over the last decade or so. Can you take one moment about that, just about what's going on at Renown Health and how it's gotten so much, you know, how it's improved so much over the last decade or so?
Absolutely. We're really fortunate in the area to have, first of all, a great community. Second of all, a great group of leaders that I work with. And third, a relatively unusual geographic distribution of our patients. Reno itself is about an 8-hour drive from Las Vegas, which is, people think of them as being in the same state, which is absolutely true. But In many ways, they're worlds apart just geographically. And then to the east of us, there are millions of square miles of really almost nothing that have very large ranches and mines that people work on. And so those are our patients as well. So I think we see all of that area as our community, and taking that community approach to taking care of our patients has really helped us to really focus on the goals that we have here, which is being able to take care of that area, recognizing that there really isn't a lot else around here for people to fall back on, and knowing that although we are not a county system, that is our history, but we aren't any longer the county system, we still have to fill the gaps that the lack of a county system leaves in our community.
Another question, and I'll go to the casino question first. Because Las Vegas is very much still a company town that revolves around the casinos, even though there's so much more to Las Vegas today. It still is almost like how LA forever was a movie town. Las Vegas is still a huge percentage of the economy is driven around casinos. The Las Vegas mayor went on TV and said something along the lines of, it's time to open up, was fairly ardent about it. She, of course, like whenever anybody says an opinion that's not the traditional opinion at that moment, was really lambasted, from the media, as that's crazy, you can't do that. They did, I think, everything they could, apolitical or not, to make her seem like an idiot, even though she's got an incredibly difficult job of trying to balance their local needs and their economy with COVID-19. So any thoughts on the opening of casinos in Reno? Any thoughts on, where does this go? How do casinos reopen? What happens?
Absolutely. It's a very timely question. The Nevada Gaming Commission just a couple days ago announced their requirements for reopening the casinos. The Nevada Gaming Commission, if you're not aware from, and you probably aren't outside of Nevada, really controls every aspect of the casinos, down to really even like the chips and everything. So an immense amount of control and power to be able to make sure that gaming is happening legally and safely for the patrons, which at this point includes their health and safety. So part of that includes like reducing the number of players that are at a table, requiring that the casino have a plan for hand sanitizer and for masks, reducing the number of slot machines by 50%, making sure that people are socially distancing as much as possible within the casino, and closing things like nightclubs and the pool clubs that are very popular and a huge draw to the state, but of course offer an interesting infectious disease challenge. So I think, I agree with you. Mayor Goodman certainly has a tough job. The state of Nevada does rely very heavily on tourism and travel, and without those jobs being available, that puts other elements of our citizens' health at risk. But there's also a fine balance of how do we protect the health at large. And to be honest, I'm not sure even with them reopening how many people are going to be in those casinos if air travel is still relatively shut down and people aren't that interested in going out in public.
And it will take a while, I assume, to sort of ramp back up and build back up. Of course, Nevada Gaming Commission is famous even for those outside of Nevada because it's featured in every casino or mafia movie in the history of the world. So it's world famous, the Nevada Gaming Commission. So my question for you is, and this may be unfair, if I like to play at the lower stakes tables, if they reduce the amount of spots by 50%, does that mean playing $5 or $10 blackjack is going to be out of the question for a year or so?
I heard a commentator talking about this not that long ago, and I think it has to be out. the costs haven't reduced that much to keep the casino open, but you got to make sure that your revenues exceed your expenses if you're going to keep your doors open. So I think those lower stakes tables are probably going to be gone. And, it is a fair question to ask, because gambling is all about risk versus reward, right? And so if you're willing to go out and risk your dollars, maybe it also now is going to require, at least at some level, risking the potentially getting the coronavirus.
Right. No, exactly. You really double down on the risk that you're taking as a risk taker. Well, just fascinating. Talk to us for a moment about in Reno, what COVID-19 has looked like. Has it been worse, better, as the same as expected? What's been your sense of it?
We, as a state, actually, I think did a really phenomenal job of flattening the curve, and especially so in Reno. We deployed televisits very rapidly. We built out an alternate care site very rapidly, doing really tremendous work that was very patient-focused, and I really appreciated that about the work that we did. And so far, although our televisits have been up from effectively zero before this happened to 1,500 or so a day, which is just absolutely great work, the need for it actually hasn't exceeded the projections, and in many cases has dramatically lowered what we are expecting in terms of our volume. That being said, we don't know what the future is going to hold as things start to reopen and maybe those curves shift to a later date and we will again need some of the elements that we built out.
And what's the right compromise? How do you find the right compromise between locking down entirely, which I think most of us understand was needed to flatten the curve so we didn't overwhelm hospitals and have some of these horrible scenes they saw in Northern Italy, but how do you maintain a community, maintain a society in a world short of entirely locking down? Because that is not a long-term solution either.
No, it's really not a long-term solution. I think it was absolutely necessary to get us where we are. And I think now it's good that we're having the conversation about what we do to be able to move on. I, for one, am tired of staying inside the house all the time. So it's nice to think about what future might allow me to go outside. I think it's what a lot of experts are saying. It's wide availability of testing, wide availability of contact tracing, isolating individuals who are unwell. And then it's appropriate that we've talked about gambling here because there is, I think, a level of risk that we as a society will need to accept is just part of the reality for the next 12 to 24 months as we start to reopen and say, you know, I really do want to go out for dinner. I always have taken the risk that if I'm eating an oyster, that there's a little bit of chance that it's not going to be a good day the next day. It could just be that going out to eat just has that little added element of risk and a little bit of a gamble that maybe as time goes on, we've learned to accept.
But isn't that so much the truth? Because you look at people at different age groups. If you're in your 20s, you might still be going out all the time to Chipotle and so forth. Even if years ago they had a salmonella scare, if you're in my age group, which is that next generation older than that or significantly older than that, you might go out, but a little bit less than you used to. And if you're our parents' generation, which are the grandparents, they may be going out, you know, once every couple weeks versus what was a regular routine. And just trying to be and being very, very careful and sitting away from people, doing everything they can. I mean, that's really what you're going to evolve to for a period of time, I guess.
I think that's absolutely where we're going. I think you probably should tell my mom that she's not in that 20 to 30 year old category yet, still. But we'll keep looking out for each other and making sure that we're all doing this something safe.
No, that sounds great. Any shout out you want to give to people on the front lines, your healthcare workers there, renown or leadership renown, or anything you'd like to say along those lines?
Absolutely. I think our acute and health services leaders have been absolutely instrumental in making sure that we have done excellent work in terms of getting an alternate care site stood up very quickly. It turns out we didn't need it, but that at that time, but that doesn't mean that the work that happened will go unused and certainly does have a community benefit. I'd like to also thank all of the IT staff that on my own team that spent hours late in the night, early in the morning and over the weekends to do all that work. And really our clinical leaders, as well as our CEO, Tony Slidham, for setting the vision for where we need to go.
Well, Dr. Woodard, just a pleasure visiting with you today. So fascinating to hear about these discussions, the reality of balancing. Look, casinos are what pays the bills in Nevada, and tourism is what pays the bills in Nevada, versus we have to be safe and just trying to make all these different judgments, plus the evolution of a chief medical information officer and how that career happens. I want to thank you for your time today. Just a total pleasure visiting with you, Dr. Woodard. Thank you.
The pleasure is mine, Scott. Thank you so much.